Hello and welcome to episode 154 of Get Out of Rap. And today I'm joined by Craig Watts of Red Recruitment, and we talk about his career and specifically about imposter syndrome and how overcoming that has really helped him in his career. He's a lovely, lovely bloke, and we have a really good laugh. Hope you enjoy it. Well, this is an episode I've been really looking forward to. I've got a big smile on my face already, because today I'm going to be talking to Craig Watts, who's the operations director at Red Recruitment. And the reason I'm smiling is, you know, when you meet someone and you just get on with them straight away, and even just over coffee, some of the stories and things like that, you just go, you know what, you'd be great on the podcast. And we're going to be talking about a really interesting subject that I'm sure a lot of you can relate to. But Craig, thank you very much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Martin. Thanks for having me on. I've been nervously excited about this one. And again, I'll replicate your comments like a brother from another mother. And, and you know, I really enjoy your sessions on a week by week with you know, contact center and recruitment industry peers. Really, I'm really getting a lot from it personally. And yeah, it's nice to go on a bit of a journey with you in a bit of a soul searching session, really.
Exactly.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Well, like you say, we've got the similar hairstyles. We both love a baseball cap. I thought I'd put mine on today.
Well, I was going to wear mine because I cut my forehead in a wee den. So it looks utterly ridiculous, but a baseball cap and a shirt don't really go together.
How did you cut your forehead?
I was shaving my head and I thought I'd go extra lean.
I feel your pain. And this is the thing people don't appreciate with bald men.
Yeah.
We also get shaving cuts.
Yes. Yeah. They're just very public. Unfortunately, and it just looks ridiculous.
No, you can carry off anything, mate. You can.
Oh, brilliant. I love it. I can't, but thank you. Yeah.
So where do we start? Where does this journey start for you?
So obviously, to introduce our subject, I guess I don't know how we got talking about it, Martin, but we've obviously both had the imposter syndrome, as it were. You know, when we talked in Newcastle, I talked about work imposter syndrome and I linked it back to school. So since said conversation, I've done some preparation to try and pick out some, you know, some real highlights of where it was really obvious to me. And I go back to a judo class when I was in infant school. And I walked in what was the Cub Hut, which was really familiar. 249 East Winds, I think it was, back in the day, right next to the railway in St. Anne's. And I walked in and everyone seemed bigger than me, even though they were younger, and everyone seemed to know what they were doing. And a mum took me and she didn't necessarily push me in, but she proactively encouraged me as she's done all my life. And I just felt like I wasn't big enough or good enough to be there. So everyone had their white fits on, as it were. And I had a tracksuit on and I just thought, I don't fit in here. This isn't for me. So since then, I've kind of looked back at other bits that have really stood out for me where I've kind of felt like that. And, you know, it's kind of been all through school.
You know what's funny though, is everyone listening can relate to what you've just said. And it's something that you want to let kids know, you know, it's that kind of, every single one of those other people in that judo class had arrived wearing a tracksuit and feeling the odd one out. Whether it's judo or any class you've gone to or any group, when you're the new person, all of those things that you were feeling were kind of, we've all felt them, haven't we?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny, you know, I've been really lucky in my childhood. My parents were, you know, we didn't really have a lot of money growing up necessarily. And we still joke about it with my sister this day because she's a bit younger than me. So I had a black and white telly that Dad used to take to work overtime on a night. So I had this black and white telly that I couldn't watch on a school night. I could only watch on weekends up to 5 o'clock. And then he went and did nights and took me telly. But you know, what I was brought up with was a real work ethic and a real just get on with everyone in every walk of life. And so whilst I kind of felt like I wasn't good enough in lots of ways, I felt rich in other ways. So it's a real funny funny mix, really, Martin. And it's really, again, when I look back at opportunities, it shaped some of the things I haven't done also. So, you know, I played football in infant school and in juniors, you know, just kicking in the playground, went to senior school, seen all these kids that were brilliant. So didn't bother. And didn't bother until I was 18. And then I really enjoyed it. And I did play at a massively, you know, paid level or anything like that. But I played it at a good level for me. And I wish I'd have done it sooner. You know, I wish I'd have got involved in schoolboy football because I think I would have been better. But even for all of my games at football, I looked around and everyone was a better footballer, whether they were in my head or not. That's kind of how I felt. And one of the managers at the time was basically said to me, look, you run around, get the ball and give it to someone who can play football. And that was my role in the team.
And nothing wrong with that.
No, and I'd become really comfortable with that. But, you know, it's that inner confidence that kind of, in my head, I always think I don't know how to do that. And I will say, don't feel confident enough or didn't feel confident enough to say, someone help me. And I think that has been the problem. I'd say probably right up to when I worked at the RAC in my mid-30s, if I'm really honest.
What did you do? Did these sort of feelings, did they carry on? What did you do when you left school?
So I left school thinking, if I go to sick form, I'm not going to enjoy it because I felt like everyone else was, you know, it was almost like death by PowerPoint. And everyone else was learning in that way. And I just wasn't learning in that way. But at the same time, I had a paper round. I had two paper rounds, actually. And, you know, I did really well at that, and as well as you could do to a paper round. And then I worked at the Holiday Inn Crowne Plaza. And, you know, I went in as a room service kind of porter, if you like. But then progressed there because I kind of learned it, did it, moved on. And that kind of built my confidence to then get a job at what was the insurance service at the time. So I didn't go to sick form and I went into the insurance service, which on my first day of walked in, and pre my first day, I didn't want to let the hotel down. So I did the room service breakfast, did all of the rounds. Last round I did, I remember it distinctly. He must have been about 8 foot bulletproof, this man I served breakfast to. Went in, took his tray down. He gave me a tip, wished me a good day. Lovely, lovely bloke. I then went downstairs, dropped off my trolley, quick shower, got my suit on, ran along Victoria Street to the insurance service office, went in for induction. Three other girls, Sadie, Joe Rice, and Ray Chundy, and Donna was the trainer. Remember it like it was yesterday. First big job. Do the tour, and the big boss who was responsible for all six floors was the last bloke I served room service to.
Look at that. That's amazing.
And he remembered me and I remembered him. We had a bit of a joke about it. And that gave me a little bit of confidence on my first day. But then it dipped because the three girls were all super, super bright and super clever and just learned everything by PowerPoint. And it was just like being at school, you know, things were being said, they were writing it down. And it was like a typical call center, old school induction. And I left that induction thinking, I don't really get it. Don't really know what I'm doing. I was only sort of 17 at the time. You know, this probably isn't for me. I don't really know where I go. And Linda Payton, who was my team leader at the time, obviously seen something in this young guy with a Timberland shirt on and a Mickey Mouse tie that absolutely didn't match. And she gave me loads of coaching and I got loads of support from the team. So Joe and Rach really, really supported me. And Rach is still a really good friend to this day. And it just clicked. And the more I did, the more it clicked. And, you know, I was just one of those learners, Martin, that I just had to do it to learn. The more I did, and, you know, someone sat next to me, and the more I did, the more I got it. And then, you know, I know we're talking back, but I was up for anything. And I think they could see that, you know, if we were quiet, I was doing the faxing, I was doing the filing, I was doing the posts. I was then taking ethnol calls. And I just constantly wanted to do more to prove my worth to myself. really. And then I kind of got comfortable in the insurance service because I knew it. So progressed through the ranks over a number of years, and the center manager changed to someone called Alex Griffiths, and she really invested in me and a number of other ops managers, too many to mention. And I had a really good group of friends that really championed me. And it, again, you know, you've got the Raches and Danny C and John Ford and of course Rob Davis, who sadly passed last year, absolutely championed me and pushed me on. And whilst I never ever spoke to them about them, it just made such a difference. And Rob, you know, it still gets me now, to be fair. But Rob was like, you can do anything, you know, and he whether he could or not, he always outwardly could do anything. And that gave me the confidence that, you know, me and Rob were quite alike in lots of ways and really not in others. But, you know, we both just went for it in our own way. And then they got taken over by RSA and closed the Bristol office. And then I went traveling. And then I was like, oh, I got to get another job now.
What was that like then? When, I mean, I love some of those points you're making there around just the thing that comes across is, A, your work ethic, even with a different learning style, right? You just put the work in, kept yourself busy. You felt a fear and you did it anyway, which I just love. But also being surrounded by supportive people. And that's what our industry is about, about, isn't it? Just kind of people looking out for people and helping them. And you're starting to flourish. You're starting to gain more confidence. And then for things outside of your control, that your world is changed. How did that affect you?
It was one of them that I kind of buried my head in the sand quite a lot about it, and I just looked for all of the positives. So I got the opportunity to set up some claim sites, so spent a good amount of time up in Sunderland, Manchester, Halifax, bit in Horsham, bit in Peterborough, and I just went around all the RSA sites just doing bits of training, bits of, you know, getting them live, really. And at the time, it was really exciting. But I think looking back on it now, it really set me up for being quite flexible around where I were. It forced me to meet new people and have a bit more confidence about meeting new people. And I kind of said, because I'd always missed out on the gap year, the traveling experience. And I got with a girlfriend at the time once we'd got the announcements out, and I said, I'm going traveling, and she went, I'll come too. And, you know, it didn't work out, but I don't think I'd have gone traveling if she wouldn't have said,
yeah,
I'm coming with you. And, you know, everything happens for a reason, right? You know,
exactly.
You know, it wasn't a bad parting of anything. And I look back on my traveling days really fondly, because I wouldn't have done it, but yeah, I just threw myself into the positives, which was great. And I had a great time. And then I came back and I kind of went from the high to the real low, and I just couldn't get my head out to look for a job. Went back. I had a house at the time, which I'd rented out, and I left that where it was. So I went back home. So I was kind of, how old was I? Must have been, you know, early 30s, you know, 31, 32. Went and moved back home. And again, and I love living with my mum and dad. It's brilliant. So, you know, it was, that wasn't the problem, but, you know, it was just too easy because I didn't have to get a job. I didn't. And I just hid from it for a few weeks. And then mum was like, look, you know, you really should start getting up a little bit earlier in the mornings, and you should start looking for something. So I literally went for one job, and I took it. And it was selling Nutri-Grain bars into news agencies, which is the toughest of toughest jobs. You know,
I bet
it's right up there with an agent's job during or the peak period. And it just wasn't me. You know, I missed call centers. I missed the vibes you get in a contact center. I miss working with a team, and you know, I've had really good teams over the past. So missed all of it. Around my sister, I had a little bit of a cry. And me noticing, they tried countering me with a few different jobs, which was a compliment. And they, you know, they were really good about it, but it just wasn't for me. So I then sat around for a little bit, and then Big Rob Davis said, look, there's a job going at the moment. Why don't you come and meet the hiring manager and see what you think? So I went along and met a bloke called Andrew Bessel in the HR director or manager at the time, Ali Hamley at Europa Group, and interviewed him. And I was there for 7 years. So,
and that was where, sorry, that was Europa Group.
That was the Europa Group, yeah. So they were, they're kind of a big insurance broker that now do financial outsourcing. So at the time they had a Gibraltar insurer, which was Octagon Insurance. So I was team leader of the sales team of 5. They grew to 60. And then I kind of progressed through. So every time Andrew went up, I went up it, and we went through the journey together. And he was super, super supportive of my passions and my ideas, but also just brought the best out in me. And then I got my confidence back and my mojo back then. And together we kind of pushed on and on with the rest of the Octagon team.
What were some of those passions then? What were the passions?
In the contact center space, I'm very much a we're in it together. You know, we're in the trenches, we're in this together. And yes, I'm leading and I take responsibility, but I need you to help me and I will help you. And we're in this together team. And that's kind of, that's been my approach. And I think that's stemmed from my football days and, you know,
yeah.
You know, all my schoolmates, we've kind of all, you know, we still are together now as a group of mates, you know, since first year senior. So it's kind of been, I've always been one of the lads.
That camaraderie.
I've always wanted to be the leader, but I've not necessarily wanted to be the boss. And I think that's kind of been my style. And I do, you know, I've had some really bad managers along the way. You know, it's not all been roses at the insurance service. You know, I've had people take credit for my work and people have been really dictatorial and have just not got the best out of me. And I'm sure I've not got the best out of them either, you know.
Right.
Whereas when people put their arm around me and take me on a journey, then, you know, more so in the past than nowadays. But, you know, I was always right. I will work for you and I will work as hard as necessary to get it done. And I feel like that for me, if you can work on, I was always a big fan of the Gallup engagement surveys. Yeah. Making sure people have got the tools to do their job.
Yeah.
They know what their targets are. And sometimes that's difficult when you're in amongst it to do all of what is asked of you. But I think my teams have always seen I've tried my best and hopefully.
That's all you can do, isn't it?
Yeah. That's why it's worked for me. You know, I'm sure some will say during our time in Ford Insure that I've probably been too delegational and, you know, I've given too much down. And there is a bit of part of me where I've got a bit of a PowerPoint fear. It's still to this day, Andy and Andy Cook will actively take the mick out of me on a monthly basis about my PowerPoint ability versus his. But I would, in Ford, I would always give it to my number two, which was Johnny and then Sora, and they would produce the packs. And I would just talk about it because I was quite good at interpreting the story, the numbers, and talking about the improvements in the work. I was just never good at putting it on a page.
Do you know what? This is one of the reasons we got on so well when we first started talking is for you, it's PowerPoint. For me, it's Excel. And I used to have this like just dread of, you know, how complex it can get and having to do things like, and again, this was back in the day, scheduling, targets, conversions. Yeah. I remember once I had to put together, we were putting together a new team and I had to do their commission. So really important stuff, and it was dependent on me going through Excel. And I did it, but it took me 3 times as long as everyone else. I hated every second of it. But there came a certain freedom, I think. And I think my team started to, it helps build connections sometimes when I would say, I'm not good at it. Because I think part of this thing about imposter syndrome is, incorrectly, we often look at leaders and think they're infallible. And when I know personally, when leaders I've worked for have shared things that they're maybe not good at or some of their concerns, I feel a better connection. I feel a warmth, like I'm, oh, you're human. And when I started sharing in my teams, like, look, can someone help me out with Excel? And I can remember one of my team, she looked at me and she was like, can't you do these pivot tables? I said, I can, but I keep making mistakes. And can you help me? And actually she was like, yeah, great. This is brilliant. And if you can laugh at yourself as well, because it became a bit of a joke, you know, just how awful I was at it. And I lent into that. I mean, where it manifested itself, I guess, negatively is then when not dealing with my team or my peers, but managing up.
Yeah.
You know, when you're taking something you've done to a group of senior leaders and you think, I'm not confident in navigating around this monster of a spreadsheet, this is going to be awful. You know, that kind of, and that feeds into this imposter syndrome monster that is just playing on these fears you've got, saying, yeah, you will fail. And then they won't think well of you at all. And then maybe, who knows, maybe you won't, they'll get rid of you because they blah, 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 blah. All of it, most of it's nonsense, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, taking your point, and if you've got balance on your team and you think you don't need to do that because someone else does it, you're absolutely right. And I think I probably leaned more into that nowadays, but I do look at, you know, probably not so much nowadays, but going back, I always looked up thinking, oh, you can do this, you can do that. And I'm not good enough to do that. So that's why you get paid that. And I don't, you know, I kind of accepted it. Whereas now I think, okay, I will do that. You know, I don't care if I've got to stay up till 11 o'clock at night, I'll get it done. And it will get done because I do want to be a success. And I'm not going to live my life thinking, I can't do it. I will try. And there are some things I'm not going to be able to do. And I've got no interest in TikToks. I'm no good at making a TikTok, but
I'm
all right with that. I'm all right watching everyone else's.
Yeah.
But you know, my motivation's changed probably in my mid to late 30s when I went for a job and I didn't get it. And I know we talked about this at the time, but the hiring manager preferred people with degrees, which is great. That's fine. There's definitely a place with that for that. And but I didn't get it. And my feedback was that I was too Bristolian and I drove a van. And it's always stuck with me, and it's always been a hang up. And you know, I went through a number of years of trying to change how I speak and all of that, because I kind of felt like that's what I had to do to progress. And then I got to the point of thinking, oh, I miss that van. And I am, you know, I love a van. So, you know, I had a VW camper because I'd always wanted one. And, you know, I prayed to be Bristolian. So
this is incredulous. So I said this to you at the time, what kind of company gives that as a reason? You dodged a bullet. You absolutely dodged a bullet. What kind of company gives that as a reason for not hiring someone?
Yeah, I don't think that was the official feedback, but the person that gave me the feedback wasn't the hiring manager, which kind of spoke volumes, really.
Mm. Did they say things like, you just don't quite fit in?
Well, no, because I did fit in, because I was really successful at the time of going, you know, I was leading the operation. It was about, I want to say it was about 550, 650 FTE. It was... You know, it was sales, service, renewals, front, you know, it was the whole back office function, including credit control. It's a big old area. And the area I was moving to was under pressure, and I knew I could make a difference to, and I didn't get it. The chap that got it was really under pressure and, you know, probably wasn't supported by the business or given a fair crack at the time. And he went on to do something else, and then I took over. And it went okay. I went in thinking, wow, you know, considerably under-resourced, missing sales by a country mile. But everyone that was involved wanted me to succeed. Mm. They just built really good relationships. And I think that was the difference, that I kind of stuck to what I knew. Mm. Like, I could do X, Y, and Z, so I'll do that in the team. Who else can do this? Right, you do that, I'll do this together. Once we've got to this place in a month, in 2 months, this is where we're going to be. We stuck on a page, told our story to the stakeholders. They give us the time to make it happen. And it went on and on and on. But you get, it's part of that journey. I did have one lady who again was probably out there with the worst of the worst, really, Martin. You know, she was she was one of them that I'm sure has also been an imposter syndrome sufferer. But the way that manifested is she was just really aggressive. And the point that she was asking me lots of questions, asked the law, gave her all the feedback, and she just didn't believe me. And it was a relationship. So she was the client. So to a certain degree, it's up to her. If she wants to believe me, she wants to go and ask people reality. I remember I walked out and she grabbed my hand and walked me along like I was a boy. And I thought at that moment, like, it's people like you that I just don't like working for, because you won't get the best out of me. And I just stopped. And she was like, looked at me as if to go, what are you doing stopping? And I looked at her as if to say, what are you doing? Why are you grabbing my hand and walking me? Like,
maybe she liked you, mate.
Maybe. Maybe. But, you know, it was one of them that I thought, right, you know, she went out, she asked all the questions, she come back and she looked at me as if to go, yeah, you know what, you have ticked all my boxes. And she was fine from that moment on. And that then gave me the confidence to almost have a bit more of a new lease of life, really, Marty. And then I left that business, went on to RAC, had a great time there, learned more than I could have ever have learned because of the scope of my role. And then the next highlight really was being at Dyson with Andy, which again, I had a great time.
Were you still carrying this? To what extent were you carrying elements of imposter syndrome, even whilst things were going well?
That's a really good question. And I think, if I'm honest, at Dyson, because it was massive and my role, you know, working with Andy was to get the contact center to perform and work alongside Andrew Brown, who was their forecast planning manager, get it to be where it needed to be. And there were a couple of other operations managers there. One was moving on and one was looking after a smaller team. What it allowed me to do was just play to my strengths. So if I'm honest, I knew what I wasn't good at, but I was, like you said earlier, I was just confident that, you know, I had someone to do Excel. I had someone to do PowerPoint. I had someone to do the products. Sheena and Nick Jenkins were excellent and have both progressed. And Sheena's gone on and on and on and on to Dyson. She's doing fantastically well. But from my perspective, I have all these people around me to just basically make me look good. And I mean that with love. I had to bring them together to almost get people where I needed them to be to support me. And I could do my bit, they could do their bit. And then outwardly, I could tell the story.
Mm.
And again, I was really lucky to work with a great GB team, you know, externally that, you know, we were just a part of a massive machine within the home market. And then you're part of the global machine, you know. But we, you know, best Black Friday ever, best service level, best staff engagement, you know. It was just everything was aligned, you know, and to be fair, Andy in his PowerPoint skills was able to tell the story to all of our stakeholders. And, you know, he was really confident outwardly at telling the story. And that gave me confidence that I knew everything that I wasn't good at.
Yeah.
I had people around me that picked up the ball if I dropped it. And then that allowed me to really thrive. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. And if it wouldn't have gone to South Africa, I probably would still have been there to this day.
And then from there, though, what did you do?
So from there, I went to support a startup outsource journey. Outsourcing is tough. You know, I'd managed outsourcers in the past. I'd worked for all of the areas, and it was a Shell Energy campaign. But the chap I was working for had a plan, had an end goal, but didn't necessarily have a plan or a strategy. So it was kind of it's over to you. And so I was kind of on my way, but just without complete support in, because he didn't really believe in it. And it was just a bit of it was just really hard, if I'm honest. I had I had a good team, but probably I had someone working for me that I probably should have had a more difficult conversation with sooner. And we probably could have been a bit more successful, but you know, it was just before the energy crisis, as it were. And it just didn't have the legs, but that was okay. You know, I enjoyed it. I look back and think, you know what, I couldn't have done a lot different than I did. Mm. What was missing was a bit more investment and from the CEO, but he didn't want to invest. And the supporting team weren't as good as any other team I've worked with, right near wrongly. You know, I'm sure some people might take umbrage at that, but that's just how it is. You know, everything was controlled through the CEO. People had been promoted beyond competence, and I'm going in from working with really amazing people. You know, the role before at Dowden, I had an amazing support from the HR team to the planning team to the marketing team and the e-commerce team. And yeah, it was hard.
I lost you then. Yeah, I lost you then, Craig.
Yeah, where did I get to? Should I go back?
I think you just start. You'd come into the Cubs hut in your tracksuit. No, we only lost a little bit. So, just on some of the things we were talking about in Newcastle, this kind of, we both love the industry.
Yeah,
people can externally can say, because look at you. You know, your operations director, Red Recruitment. You've been in senior positions in contact centers elsewhere. People wouldn't necessarily, and you're gregarious. You were chatting to lots of other people. I just thought, oh, this guy's seems like good fun. Chatting to loads of other people. You wouldn't go, oh, I bet this guy's has had and still manages imposter syndrome. And it's that kind of thing. Isn't that what, I mean, I love what you're doing now, coming to talk about it, because that kind of breaks it down, doesn't it?
Yeah. I am really passionate about contact centers. You know, it's given me a great life. Really, you know, it's enabled me to go to places and meet people that, you know, I probably wouldn't if it would have been just left to me to do my own thing. But what it's given me is the confidence that not many people, they kind of do judge you a little bit because everyone judges everyone, but it's full of supporters, contact centers. Everyone wants people to do well because I think they realize that if everyone does well, everyone hits their targets, everyone wins from that. And I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy working in them and working with the people I've met through contact centers. You know, I met Katie in the contact center space. Yeah. That was an awards night after she just ordered 100 Jaeger bombs after Rob Beckett gave the awards out. And you know what? I've met some great friends along the way. And I walk into a contact center now and I still smile to this day. I'm doing a piece of consultancy for a local contact center that is an amazing business. And I walked into their contact center recently and listened to some outbound calls, and their desks are made of their product. You know, and they really do put their heart on their sleeve, and the culture is great. And I walked in and I sat down and listened to calls, and I could have sat there all day. Really, really enjoyed it. And, you know, I just think contact centers are the best place to work. You know, you make friends, you have great social life, and there is a place for home working. But I do think it's really, it's a sad state of affairs, I think, especially for contact centers. You know, and we talked to, I mentioned it the other day, that the best insight you get is from when you just tap someone on the shoulder and go, What are you experiencing? Yeah, why is it so busy this morning? What are people ringing about? Or, you know, Gordon Moore, who used to be on my team, a literal living legend, a bit like yourself, Martin, I think you'd love him. He used to come in every day, and I absolutely stole his favorite question. It was all, Ledge, what'd you have for tea last night? And that would literally be it every morning without fail. And it's a question I've asked, and I remember Sheena at Dyson when I went in and I first met the team leaders. So, Sheena, what did you have for tea last night? And she looked at me as if to go, what are you talking about? But in that conversation led on. And I joked with her later on in my time at Dyson, she went to another team leader. Who is this guy? He's come up and asked me what I have for tea last night. But again, it got conversation. And, you know, probably in, you know, week eight, I'd be walking in, and people would be coming up going, oh, great, what'd you have for tea last night? And it just, it was just enabling me to have conversation. And what it ends up to is you know, why is service so bad? Why are sales so bad? What are our customers complaining about? All of that good stuff that you don't always get picked up. You can do something with and make their lives better with. But
I love that, because I think what you're doing then is you're creating a shared language, in a way, a shared kind of rhythm and things like that. You know, I would often get told that our teams or my teams were different. You know, from an external perception point of view, they'd be like, you guys say weird things to each other. We'd have weird kind of like high fives and stuff like that. That kind of, in inverted commas, silliness was the glue that kind of held the team together. You know, you laughed about the same things, and that kind of repeating jokes or repeating silly things, that's the bonds. That's the bonds between your team that do make you different to other teams. Like I never apologized about it. I'd be like, yeah, I know we're different. I want us to be. You're different. You will have stuff going on in your team. I love it. That's the whole point, surely.
Yeah. And you are absolutely right. That camaraderie is what makes a really good team. And the team here at Red, you know, everyone's got their role. And, you know, Katie has been, you know, one of my biggest cheerleaders, for want of a better word. And has really, you know, everyone knows Katie, don't they? And, you know, she's someone to aspire to be like. And that's really given me the confidence to go, you know what, I'm good at what I'm good at. And so just talk about that and just do that. And when Katie brought me to Red, it was to just do what I'm good at. And I've kind of had the confidence to do that and learn stuff along the way. But like you've said, it's that glue, you know, to try and, you know, what I'm good at is bringing that glue. So, you know, I've made sure the office is tidy. Again, people just think, oh, that's ridiculous. Well, no one else was doing it. You know, we've got the staff area done out because everyone's too busy to do it. So, you know, getting things like the table tennis table in, and everyone takes the mic. And people are like, well, but unless someone does the rubbish jobs, it's that there's a place for someone to come in and bring their call center, contact center expertise around, you know, phone systems, the way our processes work on our recruitment system, for example, all of that good stuff I'm right involved in, and the marketing side I'm picking up now, which is thoroughly enjoying learning about. And I don't know a thing about it. So every session I go on, I'm going, look, you have to speak to me like I'm five. I don't have a clue. And I've always gone full circle on the imposter, because I'm really, and it's funny, it's more so since our conversation, really, Martin, and I'm really, really talking to you about it, I've really gone, right, I don't know. I can't do, you know, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. Someone teach me, because no one out there is going, yeah, I'm not going to give you the time of day. You know, lots of people are giving me the time of day, and I really appreciate it. And I'm learning lots and lots.
Yeah, I think there's something about not, I don't want to be in a position personally where I know I'm not finding out things that I don't know. So going self-employed, for example, I don't know anything about bookkeeping. You know, I got recommended to get QuickBooks, and I opened it up, and I felt that familiar feeling of, I have no idea what I'm looking at here. Like, yes, of course, I know what an invoice is, but this, all of this functionality, I don't know it. And then I just took a breath and thought, right, okay, you kind of like this feeling now.
Yeah.
You like not knowing, because at one point you didn't have a clue about doing a podcast, and it was, you made mistakes. You didn't know what you were doing, but you worked at it, and now you're here. At some point I'll look back and go, I can remember when I didn't have a clue about QuickBooks or doing that kind of thing. And I think we've both reached this point, haven't we? We were talking about where it's okay. It's actually a positive. Yeah. It's okay to feel, it's more about realization. I think you realize the things you're not good at, that there are other people that are better than you in other things. And that's cool, because you can learn from them. You can try and get better. but it's not a negative comparison anymore. It's not a, I think I remember I told you this story about I'd been through the mill working abroad, and I came back and there was this director who was always very confident. So I thought, and he said, something's changed about you. And I was like, oh, what? And he said, you're making eye contact. You haven't stopped making eye contact. He said, when you came into the senior leader meetings, and I was a contact center manager, so I was the most junior person in the room. He said, you just used to look down. You know, you didn't make eye contact. Now you're making eye contact. And it was only, I didn't realize it, of course, but it was only because I'd been to hell and back and survived and done okay. Yeah. That you then start going, yeah, you know what? I do know my stuff. I am okay. I am not without becoming arrogant, but kind of going, I'm all right. I'm okay. I've survived 100% of my worst days. So I'm still here. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? I've got as much right to be in this room as everybody else. And guess what? They've all got their little fears about things as well. Just some are very good at masking it.
Yeah, and I think you're right there, Martin. I did really enjoy our conversation in Newcastle, and I am looking forward to part two when we either meet again at an event or you make it down to Bristol for a beer.
Well, you said you're going to give me a whooping at table tennis, I seem to remember.
I'm still waiting for the date, to be fair, but yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
I'm in intensive training.
I'm not. But yeah, I think, you know, nowadays, what I'm passionate about, you know, I'm passionate about contact centers being an industry of choice, you know, and we share that. And I think there's lots of people that do. And the work that Katie and Red do is all about contact center agents and just trying to be the best for, you know, clients and candidates and really understanding them. I think I'm fine with that. And I'm fine with my role supporting our clients and supporting the internal team to make sure we're as good as we can be and the best in our space when we can. And I'm fine with that. You know, Katie is always going to be the recruitment person, and Jess is going to be the client person, and I'm going to be the person that supports all of that internally. Yeah. But you know what? As a team, we do champion and challenge each other in 100% the right way. So job satisfaction at the moment, I get all of the best of everything at the moment. And I'm meeting some really cool people. You know, we talked about the Centrical team earlier, you know, like, people that are really passionate about making a difference, people like yourself and people I'm meeting on your podcast that I've not actually met, but you know, I just really enjoy other people's point of view at the moment and learning about stuff that I thought I knew, but I'm further enhancing. And yeah, like life's hard at the moment for lots of people, you know, it's going to be it's tough for kids at the moment, you know?
Yeah.
The economy is a whole session on its own. Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of bad news if you look for it. And I feel like I can be easily swayed into negativity if I allow myself now. And I said to Katie the other day, you know, we were researching some stuff on TikTok or Instagram. And I said, there is just bad news everywhere you look. And I haven't really been on social for the last couple of weeks because it's just bad news and it just gets you down. So I'm kind of, I still have got, if you said to me now, right, Craig, there's a 1,000-seat contact center, you know, it's on his backside. I need you to come in and help me crack on. I'd be right up for it and I'd really enjoy it. I'd still wobble to this day because I want to do well. I'm quite proud. You know, I'm proud of where I come from. I'm proud of the upbringing I've had and my contribution to the world. And I want to be seen to be good at what I do. And when I feel like I'm not, I still have a wobble. It's less of a wobble now again, and I'll talk about it more than I do. But, you know, it's still there. And I think that, like you said, I used to think I was the only one. And you know, just being able to find, you know, I know I talk about the conversation in Newcastle a lot, but when you were talking, it was like you were reading a script in my head. And I've never really opened up as much because I've never really met anyone that I could open up as much to because they appreciated how I feel. And you know, that's just given me so much confidence.
Well, it's reciprocated, and you should be proud. You should be proud of everything you've done and the person you are. And that kind of, that honesty, I find really, really appealing. And I think it helps us all to be honest about, you know, you can say, I'm really up for this challenge, but I'm also really scared, you know, and that's kind of what I'm doing with being self-employed. Now, I could, if I allowed myself to, sit in the corner and just rock backwards and forwards, worried. You know, the second day of being self-employed, a partner that I kind of banked on helping support the podcast through a budget change outside of their control, my second day, first meeting of the day, they said, sorry, we can't support you. And I'd banked quite a bit on that. And, you know, you have this moment where you just think, oh God, what have I done? And then go, okay, right, this, you've just got to get on. You just got to keep going. Yeah. You just got to keep going. It doesn't mean to say that I dropped that fear. It's just learning to be comfortable with it and rely on the fact that actually, all things being equal, your win percentage is higher than your loss percentage, you know, and that's something, even as a Tottenham fan, I'm confident in saying, right? I've won more than I've lost, and you've just got to keep going. And we've mentioned it a few times, just having the chance to sit down and chat with you and how open you were. And it's, yeah, like a kindred spirit to go, you know what, but let's be honest, we're both doing okay. We've done well in our careers, but we've done it whilst also at times having huge imposter syndrome of thinking, I'm not good enough. I'm not like the successful people around me. And the more I've looked into this and the more people I've spoken to about it, and if you think about it, we're two white middle-aged males talking about it. It's a whole nother level if you're not like us, right? And helping people by talking, if this helps anyone, by saying, you know what, that feeling that you're not good enough can actually become a bit of fuel. I imagine when, you know, you carry around that feedback around the van and your accent, which I love, by the way, and I bet you at times that's fueled you, is you've just been kind of like, you know what, F you, I'm going to show you.
Yeah. Yeah, it really has. And but again, being really, really honest with you, Martin, it's probably fueled me to find the wrong definition of success. So, you know, did success look like, you know, driving a 5 Series BMW, turning up to work in a suit in an office on your own, doing tasks and stuff that you don't really enjoy? Because that's what that job was. That's what that, you know, it was, I'm going to have your job one day and that's what I'm going for, you know, and that was kind of my mindset. I will do whatever I need to do to be a success and I will get there and I will almost have what you've got. But then as the more I kind of progressed, if you like, the more I realized it, success for me is, you know, going down to North Devon on the weekend, you know, getting to our place down there, getting a really nice tie from the local takeaway, walking down to the butcher's on a Saturday morning and getting in the sea, either Salton or Croyde, just watching the world go by, getting a bit chilly and then go and put the log burner on or leave then. And, you know, making sure the kids are glowing and smiling and happy and the dogs are tired, sleeping and your parents are happy and healthy, you know. That for me is now the measure of my success. And I think that's really helped me realize that I don't want to, you know, I want to be my own man. And I don't want to be that anymore. I'm quite happy as I am in my own skin. And my measure of success is very different now.
I love that. Just the picture you painted then, I would like you to adopt me, if that's okay. So I
come on down, brother. Come on down. There's enough room for everyone.
Yeah. Now, we... We haven't got much time, but we haven't touched on your little side hustle as well, which is fascinating.
So, so I got made redundant a few times, and I felt like my finances were out of my control. So I wanted to a bit similar to you in a way of trying to put my own finances in my own control. So I looked around and I thought, right, what am I passionate about? Okay, well, I can't sell my family and make money, so that one's out. But I had a real punch on for log burners, fires, open fires, you know, the whole seasoning of wood process and all of that stuff. And I was like, chimney sweep, it's on. So I went and looked and did a course down in, I can't remember the place now, but it's halfway between Bristol and North Devon, Tiverton. And I did a 3-day course. And the first day of the course was after a stag do. I was really tired. But yeah, I did that. That was probably about 4 or 5 years ago now. So yeah, keep my hand in there. The first sweep of the year is always a chap called Phil Page. I only ever book one sweep in that day because he's a bit like you, and I really enjoy my time with him. And I only see him once a year. I turn up, sweep the log burner, and then we chat about, you know, all the work he's done in his house. He's a lovely house, which is a big old project, you know, and it's, again, I find it really interesting. He found a massive well in his back, in his front garden that he's dug up, and he's built this, he calls it the log shed. It's bigger than a greenhouse. It's huge. And yeah, like I just love it. So I think before Red, I was decided, am I going to do that full time? Am I going to do it part time and do this part time? And it just got really busier that I just couldn't commit to it. Mm. But I do still keep my hand in, and I really enjoy it because I learned while doing it. You know, there's lots of theory to it and stuff. And I picked that up and I had to really force myself because, again, it was death by PowerPoint. So I had to make loads of notes. I had to read a lot on the evenings. But as soon as it comes to, you know, getting the old bamboo out of chimney, it's just a physical job.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it. So yeah.
Well, there's two firsts, right, that you are responsible for on Get Out of Rap. Definitely the first person that can sweep a chimney. But secondly, and I think this is testament to the person you are, I don't think I've ever had a guest on who has named so many people that they've worked with and the impact that they've had on you. But I bet you every single one of them listening would say what a positive impact you've had on them. And I think it is testament to what a lovely person you are, and that people are at the heart of your career, how you operate, how you deliver success, where you are now at Red and everywhere else you've ever been. Because all the way through, or talking about your career, you've named so many people, and far more than anyone else has ever done. And I think that's because you genuinely, genuinely care about everyone that you've ever met. And you're a lovely, lovely bloke.
Oh, stop it. I got a girlfriend already. No, I am, you know, looking back, and it is a bit like This Is Your Life, like a work version of This Is Your Life. But, you know, I used to have, when I went in Dyson, I said to both Nick and Sheena, you know, my job is to get you both promoted. You support me and I'll support you, and we're in this together. And, you know, I stuck to my word and they stuck to theirs. And if I look back, there are so many people that have really supported me. You know, Europa, I had Big Rob, but there was also Nigel Knight, Craig DeMille, and, you know, there was just so many people that made me the success I am, you know, because they just bought in what I was trying to achieve. And yeah. You know, if I look now at some of them, the people I work with, you know, I do really smile. There's a chap called James Wiltshire that I work with, and he was a bit like a younger me in lots of ways, but he now works for Bath Rugby. And again, he does lots with the marketing team. I see lots of them, you know, people that have worked under me and I've worked for, they are, you know, super successful now. They, you know, they still champion me and I champion them, you know.
Lovely,
in,
isn't
in
it?
Lots of industries. And yeah, I've just been really fortunate for, you know, the family, the friends and the work friends that I've met. And, you know, coming to Red, the team there have been great. So yeah, I've just been really, really lucky. And that's given me the confidence to be able to speak today. And again, like, it's easy speaking to you. And I know there's probably going to be about four people that watch this, especially to the end. But I just if we can help one person, then I think
we've done
a good thing today, and it's been a really good use of time. And I could speak to you for hours on end, Martin. So
I'm the same, and I think for those four people that are still watching, we'll do another one, and let's see if we can do it in Red. We'll televise some of the table tennis, and we'll just have a chat. Maybe I can come with you on a sweep as well.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. 100%. And, you know, you're more than welcome in Team Red. And yeah, we'll definitely work on something together. I know I talked about it, but I'll share with you offline the next project. But yeah, you know, we're doing something here that I think you'd really enjoy to be part of. So
love it. Well, Craig, thanks so much for coming on. I knew I would, but I've really enjoyed it. And I'm sure there'll be more than four people listening. I'm sure everyone's listened to it will value it and what you've shared as well. So Craig Watts from Red Recruitment, thanks so much, mate.
And you, Martin, and thanks for, and again, it's not been long, but thanks for your friendship and just being there as a supporter, really. I do really appreciate your time. And a little footballer's clap. I know you didn't get to do many of them at Tottenham nowadays, but, you know, thanks for all your support.
As much as I did chatting to Craig, he's a lovely guy. Thanks very much for tuning in, and take care of yourselves.